Is this the ghost of Jack Smith, a Democrat senator indicted for bribery?
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo. We want to hear from you. Share and post your comments or call 1-800-684-3110. And now your host, Jordan Seculo.
Hey, welcome to Seculo. It's Friday. I'm back in the studio after touring around, traveling in New York and the UN General Assembly. We're going to have Mike Pompeo back on today with us to discuss some of these threats made against him by Iran's president right from the UN podium at the UN General Assembly. So a lot to talk about there. But some new information, and now you may have remembered Bob Menendez's name as a U.S. senator, Democrat from New Jersey. 6 years ago, the Jack Smith team tried to prosecute him, and that didn't work. That didn't hold up in court. Very similar charges as you're hearing today, bribery by individuals to, you know, protect them, to put certain legislation in place. This time, it's him and his wife who are being charged to by protecting three businessmen from New Jersey and Egypt. It's the Southern District of New York. There was a raid on his home in June of 2022, nearly $500,000 in cash, 81 ounces of gold bars that value $155,000. I know, Logan, those gold bars, always of interest to you, and a luxury vehicle.
Well, I mean, both of those things.
Yeah, of course. Now, this is, again, the second time.
I got thrown under the bus for my love of gold bars.
Well, you know,
I'm a gold bar collector, like a pirate. Like, I'm an old pirate.
These gold bars look like they were from a pirate ship.
Can we show them?
Yeah. Can we show them? It's Friday.
Them on the big screen here.
Okay, those are not like Dubai polished gold bars.
Kilos, as you'd expect.
Yeah. Egypt was involved in this, of course, as you would suspect from gold, maybe from the time of the pharaohs. Yeah. The question is, though, is this a legitimate indictment, or is this, again, because the Biden administration's pushing for an Iran deal similar to what the Obama administration was pushing for, and Menendez is one of the only Democrat senators who votes against the deal and puts the deal in jeopardy, especially in a very divided Senate. So is this, again, a punishment because Bob Menendez, Logan, doesn't walk the line, or is it that he's committed legitimate crime? It's tough now because the first time around, it was so obvious that he was being at least prosecuted, at least investigated for wrongdoing because of his vote. And you have to wonder in this day and age, certainly with this Department of Justice, when they bring a politician and their wife, I mean, it's so similar to what they did to Bob McDonnell and his wife. Is it for political purposes, or is it actually? It's sad that you have to even do this in the United States of America now, Logan, where we have to look at an indictment that we'd usually say, okay, this is probably really bad. This senator probably did something bad. Where now is the American people, now is the ACLJ. We go,
everything.
I wonder if the DOJ is legitimate here.
Well, I think that's true on all walks of life. It's not even the DOJ. It's just whenever there's some sort of allegation, you always have to look, sadly, for a political motive. Even if it's something that's very egregious, sometimes it's light. Why is it happening? A lot of times it is not what's on face value. Now, this, we'll see what happens here, where it comes from, but you're right. When it happens to be targeted at one of the few people that doesn't necessarily go along with the strict agenda, you at least have to question it and say, why is this happening? Yeah. So we got a lot of comments coming in. You can also give us a call at 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110 to be on the air today. We'll also be joined a little bit later by Mike Pompeo, as you said.
Yeah, and if you're from New Jersey, too, we'd love to hear from you, 1-800-684-3110. During his years as chief of the public corruption office at DOJ, Jack Smith garnered a successful conviction against Governor Bob McDonnell. It was unanimously overturned by the U.S. Supreme Court, 9-0, but it still ruined his life, I would say, for a long period of time.
His career and his family.
Right. He went after John Edwards, remember that? And that was about, like, his haircuts and the... Again, something he paid somebody, the money, and a hung jury in a mistrial. Secured a victory against a congressman, Rick Renzi, who's a Republican, but he was pardoned by Trump. And then had an unsuccessful prosecution of Bob Menendez that he laid the groundwork for. That was 6 years ago. So we say the ghost of Jack Smith because the guy is good at getting people indicted, not so good at getting a conviction, and if his convictions are then challenged in court, certainly has not been successful in getting them held up. We're going to take your calls at 1-800-684-3110. We have more to talk about in the case involving these 14th Amendment challenges to your right to vote for who you choose on the ballot. We've just secured the West Virginia GOP as another client. Another state will be filing in. There's an additional state I can't announce yet. That'll bring it to four. Right now, as we speak, we have attorneys on with Colorado on that legal front. You know, that was the first one filed. It's moving the quickest right now. Stay engaged, ACLJ. All right, welcome back to Secular. We're taking your calls, too. Listen, a lot of you already are figuring out the parallels here. Sounds a lot like what Joe Biden's been accused of, a lot like what Hunter Biden's been accused of, and yet we don't see those charges being filed. We see gun charges, I think, being filed later this month. We see, we see maybe tax charges of late tax filings being charged, but what we don't hear about is the corruption. It's been widely alleged, and yet it's like no one is actually looking into that, and that's because it appears that the people who supposedly had the power to investigate into that don't actually have the power to investigate it, like David Weiss and some of these U.S. attorneys who, when they were put into that role, said, you know, you've got full power, and then you learn that they don't really have that kind of power at all. So, of course, there is a bizarre disconnect here between going after the U.S. senator who has bucked the White House before on its Iran policy under the Obama administration and likely under the Biden administration. If they tried to reach some kind of nuclear deal, he's been very much a supporter of Israel, which has been out of line with the mainstream Democrat Party. So it seemed like that last time he went through this 6 years ago, it was like if he couldn't get him then, and he got reelected. I'll bring in Andy on this because, Andy, it does seem like some of these prosecutors, they get obsessed with one individual. And so it's like 6 years, they couldn't get the charge, they get thrown out of court, they can't get a conviction through. But they're obsessed. So instead of looking at kind of like moving on to the next problem, they're still stuck on how do we get Bob Menendez thrown in jail? Let's include his wife this time. And I'm not saying that the charges aren't adequate or they're not legitimate, but it seems like they just get a focus on you, and it's kind of unfair.
Well, it is. It's a kind of a prosecutorial fanaticism. They focus on a person and they determine they're going to get him. And they're going to get him at all costs, whether it's McConnell or John Edwards or Renzi or, in this case, Bob Menendez. Jack Smith has made a determination that he's going to take him down. He couldn't take him down last time. Abby Lowell stood in the way, his lawyer from Washington, D.C. I presume he'll get Abby Lowell again to defend him in the Southern District of New York in this case. But it's just a determination, a fanatic determination, to target a person and to get him until he goes down. Now, I'm not saying Menendez is innocent of these charges. I'm not saying he's guilty of these charges. That has to be proven beyond a reasonable doubt in a federal court when he's tried. But, I mean, they have focused on him, and they're going to get him. One way or another, they're not going to let him go, Jordan.
Yeah, I mean, I read the charges. They're kind of broad, you know, to benefit three businessmen from New Jersey and Egypt. And I think about a senator's role, Logan. You think about how many business people they meet with who might also be donors to their campaigns. I mean, some of this, yeah, you better have your evidence in court because it just sounds like politics as usual. Not necessarily right in Washington, D.C., but kind of what we've come to expect in Washington, D.C. is that a lot of these senators do protect their donor friends. I mean, and at what line does it actually become a crime?
Corruption,
that your wife is engaged in, too? I mean, I feel like that's always like next level when you try to bring charges against their wife.
Yeah, and we see that, like you said, you saw it with Bob McDonald. You see these kind of things that happen with families. I mean, again, we're not defending it. We don't know, you know, what exactly happened here. But you do have to question all the motives.
I do these days.
Especially when there are politics involved, and politics involved that are not always clean cut. It's not like the left going after the hard left. It is the left going after one of their few that's obviously a Democrat, but at least will question the party line.
Think about, because of what Donald Trump's facing legally, they don't want you to even have a vote for him. And these 14th Amendment challenges are not going away. We are adding additional states. So as we speak, I can tell you today, we signed an agreement retainer with the West Virginia GOP. There's another state already that we're right on the edge of announcing as well. I'm not going to announce it today, so that would bring us to four of these. Colorado, that case is moving forward. Some of these cases are going to get dismissed, rightfully so. But in some of these cases, you're going to have trials. Evidence is going to be presented. Discovery is going to be done. And we're in those pretrial conferences as we speak right now in Colorado. While we are having this broadcast, we've got ACLJ attorneys on the calls in Colorado at these pretrial hearings with the judge. So it is a time to support the work of the ACLJ as we protect your right to vote, Logan, because they use this same idea as the fact that the president's been indicted for different jurisdictions. I think, 90 plus different charges he's facing, 100 plus years in jail. I mean, you know, life in prison, all these issues. And the idea is that his poll numbers have gone up. So now they've said, well, since it looks like he's going to win the nomination, Democrats and elite Republicans in Washington, D.C. are working together to try and get him not off the ballot, but to be able to prevent from counting any votes for him on the ballot.
Yeah, I guess, is that sort of the caveat here?
Yeah.
We've been trying to say that too. It's not necessarily not on the ballot
you
now.
You can write him in, but they won't count it.
Even if you write him in. So,
right.
So he wouldn't be on the ballot, and you can't vote for him if you want to controlling who you're going to vote for and who you're not going to vote for. I don't think that's something that you would hope you would see even Democrats go, this could very much backfire us on the future, but they don't seem to care.
Yeah, I mean, Ricardo on YouTube writes in, bribery and selling influence. That's happens with what happens with Joe Biden. That's where the people question is. Joey on Rumble, I wonder what Menendez did to make the DOJ mad, or is he the scapegoat for the DOJ to try to make the country think they are not biased? It does seem like the DOJ is on a rampage, Andy.
It is on a rampage. They're making this determination now to come after this U.S. senator, and I don't know, again, as Logan said, I don't know whether he's innocent or guilty. That's not for me to decide. That's for a jury of 12 people in the Southern District of New York to decide, but they certainly have focused the guns on him, whatever reason, maybe because he veered away from the Justice Department, the administration policy with respect to Israel. Maybe he made him mad, he made somebody angry, and they found gold and they found stuff stuck in the clothes, and then now the wife is a defendant too. That always puts a lot of pressure. I prosecuted a man and his wife once in a tax fraud case. That put a lot of pressure on that husband. Yep. He pled guilty because I cut his wife loose, and it's the same kind of thing. That's really putting a lot of pressure on Menendez right now when his wife is a co-defendant in the case. Yep. He may topple because of that and do something to cut a deal for her. Who knows?
Yep. Yep. All right, you want to go ahead and take a call? Let's go to Mary Ellen, who's calling in Illinois on line one. Mary Ellen, welcome.
Oh, hello. Thank you for taking my call. My theory is I think it's a distraction because I listened to those interviews with in Congress with Merrick Garland. And after listening to all of that, I thought to myself, oh, I wonder who they're going to pull out of the rabbit out of the hat to, have a distraction. And sure enough, I hear this and I'm thinking, oh, well, here we go again.
Yeah, I mean, so you had Merrick Garland testify for the first time since Republicans had taken back the House. He said, there's not the two-tiered system of justice, Logan. I didn't have a time yet to even comment on this, but he did the hearing and he said, it's not what you think. Everything's fair. David Weiss has the power to do it. But yet the next day, a Democrat gets charged. You think, like, as Mary Ellen said now, and this is unfortunate for our whole justice system. It's why it needs such reform, because we've got to get back to where it's equal justice under the law and that we trust our law enforcement. They're doing the right thing most of the time, that there might be a few bad apples, but that the bad apples aren't running the ship. Right now, it feels like we have to assume bad apples, Andy, are running the ship, and the good people within are the whistleblowers.
Well, they really are. I mean, Merrick Garland, who claimed yesterday he was not a prosecutor for Congress and was not the president's lawyer, is a liar. Basically, and Tom Cotton, the senator from Arkansas, said that at a Judiciary Committee hearing, said the best thing that I've ever heard. Thank God you're not on the Supreme Court. Can you imagine having somebody like Merrick Garland on the Supreme Court of the United States? But he is not the type of stellar attorney general. When I think of attorneys general, I think of the one I worked for when I was in the Justice Department, Griffin Bell. There is a stellar attorney general. Someone like Bill Barr, someone like William French Smith, someone like Edward Levy, people who we looked up to, Edwin Meese and so forth. And in those positions now we've got people like Merrick Garland. Give me a break.
Yeah. Wasn't popular enough to go through the Supreme Court with the Democrats. And then they said, oh, let's make him Attorney General. And he's gotten a heavy criticism as Attorney General from the left for saying he wasn't aggressive enough. And then it's like he went overly aggressive and the personality doesn't really match the tone with him, but yet the aggression from the Department of Justice is extreme. They bring Jack Smith back from Kosovo to start prosecuting everyone. Take a listen. This is from what Andy referenced, the Garland testimony yesterday.
As the president himself has said, and I reaffirm today, I am not the president's lawyer. I will add, I am not Congress's prosecutor. The Justice Department works for the American people. Our job is to follow the facts and the law, and that is what we do.
I mean, that is so simple at this point, Andy, and it seems just so absurd, the statement. One, he does seem like he's the president's lawyer, even though that's not supposed to be the role of the attorney general, because he seems like he picks and chooses. Obviously, he didn't allow—David Weiss wasn't an actual special counsel at first. At first, he was just a U.S. attorney given the powers like a special counsel until whistleblowers came out and said, actually didn't have those powers. And they said, okay, we'll make him a special counsel because we're getting too much pressure on Hunter Biden. I mean, it's a bizarre political time because you have Democrats in Washington, D.C., many who would like to push Joe Biden out, but they are running out of time to push Joe Biden out. So they're coming after people, too, like Merrick Garland.
Yeah, they are. And Merrick Garland, again, put his career on the line here when he made the statement or put his reputation on the line that he's not the president's lawyer and he's not Congress's prosecutor. The fact is, he is. There is not that bright line between the Justice Department and the presidency that there needs to be, I'm afraid to say.
All right, folks, we're going to continue to take your phone calls, 1-800-684-3010. When we come back, Congress beginning to question the funding to Ukraine. Like, how about, hey, before we authorize another $100 million of your taxpayer money, could you give us an accounting of what the money has been spent on? Could you tell us where this money has gone while our nation's borders are open, while people are dying from a massive drug epidemic in the United States, and our major cities in the country are crumbling? Could you tell us where this money is going to Ukraine before we spend it? And of course, they don't want to tell you. Be right back on Seculum. Back to Secular. We are taking your calls to 1-800-684-3110. I am not trying to downplay, by the way, the charges against Bob Menendez. I'm not even defending Bob Menendez. I just am suspicious now of all DOJ moves the day after, you know, Merrick Garland's given this testimony about how nonpartisan the DOJ is, that they come after Bob Menendez again, a Democrat. I also look at to the Ukraine issue. You know, it's Washington's favorite issue is the issue in Ukraine. And what we are seeing now is, Logan, members of Congress finally, J.D. Vance leading this with Chip Roy, who's about to broadcast a number of times. They've got a request for another $24 billion in security. That is on top of the U.S., which has appropriated $114 billion in supplemental funding for Ukraine, on top of $70 billion of military hardware, so nearly $200 billion. And they come to Congress for another $24 billion. All Congress said is, we would like to know how the money has been spent. You know, this has been a country that's been ripe with corruption before. We would like to know where the money has gone. How is the counteroffensive going? Are Ukrainians any closer to victory than they were 6 months ago? What is our strategy and what is the president's exit plan? What does the administration define as a victory in Ukraine? Because, Logan, to me, it feels like they define a stalemate as a victory. And that a stalemate is unending.
What's odd about the whole situation, and I could say this for a lot of topics, is it feels like the government is very quick to respond to where the American people are.
Yeah.
Initially. Because initially, I think most people were like, yeah, we got to get behind Ukraine, help out.
Right.
But then they don't listen when the American people finally say, okay, but there is a limit. There's a line. We're not sure where things are going right now. We thought this was going to be a war that was going to last a couple months.
Right.
But now that we're prolonging it to 2 years, they don't listen to what the American people are actually saying,
right,
which I'm sure you can go back and find us going, yes, we need to be supporting Ukraine. We need to be out there and helping out where we can as they were going through the initial wave of attacks coming upon them. But it doesn't mean that one way is right forever. And I think that's what we've kind of seen over the last 3 or 4 years with this administration, which is, it's like they take what the American people want initially, they think they want, and never listen to beyond that. They go, well, and you can see it from the politicians, even the conservatives that go over to Ukraine, like, look at this. Like, some of it, I believe you should be seeing. We should be seeing what's happening there.
Right.
But they're not listening.
Well, I would just want to be told, what's victory look like? Okay, what does winning look like? What does bringing this to an end look like? Even if it's a long way away. What's your idea of this coming to an end? Where does this stop? Is it Ukraine pushes back this much? Is it Ukraine pushes back this far? It seems like Ukraine's been fairly successful in keeping massive Russian aggression from being successful. But the Russians haven't given up yet. And in fact, they ignored the UN. So did China. I mean, what kind of signal is that to the world where Xi doesn't show up and Putin doesn't show up?
Yeah, the biggest leaders.
Top
five.
And they're doing it in concert together. You know that. That is not a secret that they are not going to even... They're not even taking the opportunity to address the world at that stage.
Yeah.
They think it's become a stage not worth going to.
Yeah, sometimes. And you can understand a little bit from Putin because of security risks right now. But
the Iranians got no problem. We're going to talk about that with Mike Pompeo. They got no problem coming over and threatening Americans.
I don't know. I mean, I feel like he at this point yes, there's hostility between all these countries and China, but it's not the same kind of hostility as there is with Russia.
Yeah, we're doing so much business with China. Xi could be fine in New York, you would think. He's
many businesses. Right.
But it was more of a signal to the world.
That's what I mean.
That we are reorganizing the world order. And that this old world order that we're still a part of, you know, the Security Council, we got our vote to veto things, the Security Council, but we don't really care if we can't bring this ahead. I would play this by from Kirby. Yeah, because this is when they basically say they have no exit strategy. This is scary.
What's the strategy? What's the exit plan here for the U.S.?
Well, again, I'm not exactly clear what the senator's referring to. Normally, when you talk about exit strategy, you're talking about getting American troops out of a war zone, that kind of thing. It's important to remember that we don't have American troops in Ukraine. Ukrainians are on their soil, and they're fighting for every inch of it. So I don't think they plan on going anywhere.
We are providing the military aid. We are providing the military aid and obviously financial aid.
I mean, he tries to say because we don't have American troops that they don't have to figure out how this comes to an end, Logan. But we are funding this.
Yeah, where does our funding come to an end?
And instead of funding more security at the border, instead of funding to beat back the drug cartels, instead of funding to beat back the human trafficking, we've decided we're going to fund this. And everybody, I think, might be okay with it if you can tell us what's the goal. And the goal cannot be endless war. It cannot be endless bloodshed. It can't be a 20-year war of attrition that we're going to just be the funder of. But in fact, we all know we're being punished for funding that. That's why oil prices are higher. That's why inflation is higher, is because we have engaged a country that is the number one gas producer to most of Europe,
right?
Natural gas, Russia, and told them they can't use it, so they're not. And then we're having to supplement everybody with our money, with our taxpayer dollars.
Yeah, hey, phone lines are jammed completely right now, but we're going to try to get through as many of these as possible. Let's go ahead and take a call. Not necessarily directly related, but an interesting comment. Jim's calling from Maryland, line two, listening on the radio. We appreciate it. Jim, you're on the air.
Hey, Jim.
Hey, good afternoon, guys. I just want to thank you first for everything you do for us. And now I have two questions. I'll try to make them quick so you can take more callers. Number one, I'd like to know what's being done to make sure the American people have a fair election next year. I haven't heard much talk about it whatsoever, and that's very concerning for me. And also, I hear Joe Biden plans on bringing out digital cash next year, and I know that's a very bad thing, and I'm wondering if the ACLJ is involved in doing anything to make sure that does not happen.
Well, on voting, I think we've taken, Logan, a major stand at the ACLJ. We've decided to put massive amount of resources behind the defense of making sure people have the right to vote for who they want to. I mean, the first step, Jim, is they literally want to take away your ability to vote for Donald Trump. And that's who they're choosing this voting cycle. If this becomes the norm where they don't even have to go through a primary, they can take the number one threat to the Democrat Party off the ballot by saying, well, this person said this, we don't like the words they use, so you can't vote for them. It doesn't matter if they're on the ballot, it doesn't matter if they're write-in candidate, your vote will not be counted. And we're now active in court in Colorado, Oklahoma, now West Virginia. We have announced signing on the West Virginia GOP as a client. There's another state we're right on the edge of, just probably later this afternoon or early Monday we'll announce as well. So we're going around the country defending your ability to choose who you want to be your presidential candidate. So that is part one. Now, part two on the finance side. Will, you want to jump in here a little on the financial news?
I just saw an alert. He just sent a thing. All I saw was Death Star. So it got my attention.
So there are always talks within the administration of trying to create this digital currency within the central bank. And there are members of Congress that are speaking out about it, trying to put a block to it with a divided Congress. I don't see that going forward at this time, but it is something to keep an eye on.
Yeah, and it's also
this is not digitizing the U.S. currency. This is a separate, this is like a crypto, but run by the U.S.
within the central bank, so within the Federal Reserve system.
I don't think you just keep not even printing money, just make money out of.
And then we know a lot was going on with the BRICS nation and some of there. So there's a lot of stuff when it comes to money currency. And gold, obviously, that we've talked about. That's pretty interesting.
Oh, I think the whole future of currency is in a crosshairs right now. I mean, Yellen has said she supports some kind of central bank digital currency. And I think at a time of rapid inflation, it's when people freak out. I think the older they get too, because you get to 62 and you think, how am I going to retire? What do I need? My 401k is up and down. And also I want to leave something for my family. The cost of college tuition is insane. So what you might have needed 2 or 3 years ago is tripled or quadrupled. You're depending on what kind of interest rate you had in your home, you're paying double for the same home. that you were just a few years ago under President Trump. So elections have consequences. We've got a second half hour coming up, Logan. But like that caller said, what are you doing to ensure our right to vote? We are in the battle, Logan, in states across the country, ensuring people have the right to choose who they want to be their nominee for president.
That's right. And get in the fight as well. Join us. Go to ACLJ.org. Make a donation today. We really would appreciate it. As you said, second half hour coming up. Mike Pompeo joining us in just a couple minutes.
Keeping you informed and engaged. Now, more than ever. This is Seculo. And now your host, Jordan Seculo.
All right, welcome back to Seculo. We are taking your calls to 1-800-684-3110. We've hit a lot of topics already today on the broadcast. These charges about Bob Menendez that have been announced. You know, I'm not, again, casting judgment on whether these charges are legitimate or not. I do know that 6 years ago they tried to do this to Bob Menendez. He won in court. And you do wonder, is he just, the DOJ just gets their target on you and they can't quit? It's like they can't quit you, Logan. They must somehow figure out a way to get you prosecuted. And this time around, it's suspicious because they want to look like they're not being partisan by how they're going after Donald Trump or Republicans. So it's like, throw in their favorite Democrat to prosecute. We'll just throw in a Menendez charge. He doesn't stand with us where, vote with us where we vote on the Iran issue. So let's bring the charges against him again.
Yep. Let's go ahead. Let's go back to the phone calls. 1-800-684-3110. And Mike Pompeo is going to be joining us in the next segment. Let's go to Todd, the state of Georgia, online four. You're on the air.
Hey, Todd. Hey, yes. Thanks for everything you do. I just wanted to point out that after World War II, the Marshall Plan, they had Inspector General to follow money. And if you add up the Ukraine money and everything that's being given to illegal aliens, it's probably approaching $500 billion. And this cryptocurrency, FTX, Sam Bankman-Fried, that was an offshore money laundering slush fund, foreign money coming in. So, you know, there's a lot of serious issues. So I appreciate all your hard work.
Yeah, no, listen, I think that we've had that moment with cryptocurrency. It was the hottest thing ever. And Logan, I think it got a little bit, it's not over.
No.
I think it's probably part of the future.
Yeah.
But I think that it got so hot. There were conferences going on. There were people putting a lot of money into it. It was going up, up, up. And then it's not worth nothing, but it's certainly leveled out.
It was. And I think a lot of that had to do with what's going on the last couple of years, even. It was a growing trend for a lot of people. And it kind of fell apart. Yes. And that, look, that happens. Stock markets drop. Everything moves up and down financially.
When you've got something to break through the entire normal doing business is normal.
And I think that's also, look, it's not, doesn't necessarily not tie into what's going on with Menendez, is that it's also a different kind of traceable funding. Right. You know, it's kind of like I said, I always talk about like the collectibles boom that happened during COVID, that a lot of that was money moving around. Some of it
not
was real.
Actors.
Some of it was
by
real. Yes. But some of it was like the price of art skyrocketing, the price of a comic book going from, you know, one that would be $2,000 or $3,000 to 50. And you're like, well, what happened here? And then they would settle back. Now they've all settled back down all of a sudden in last year.
No one's complaining.
So you're not telling me that like the guy who bought the Fantastic Four number one for $100,000 last year, this year he's fine with it taking a $70,000 loss. That's not how this works.
Nope.
And I think the similar happened with the crypto world. There's a legitimate side of it. And then there's kind of a dark underbelly side of it.
Yeah.
And just like there is in everything. So you have to kind of sort through all of that.
Yeah, and there were these massive banks that were having to be bailed out with huge investors like the Sam Bankman. That whole bank.
That whole thing.
We were bailing out billionaires to make sure that I remember having Harry on, and we were talking about how we were having to bail it out because if we didn't bail it out, the entire U.S. economy was about to crash because all these billionaires were invested in it. And all the billionaires hire so many people. Like when you start looking at their tentacles, they're employing all of us. And they're paying everybody for their job so that if they start falling, the whole economy falls. So people really didn't even feel the pain from those banks failing.
Yeah.
But what they did do is make people think twice about investing.
Yeah, well, I think when you had people like Fried, and you also have, even honestly, the sort of them trying to politicize and take down Elon Musk, and he was such a proponent of it. It's similar to like driving a Tesla. It almost becomes a political statement now. And I think that was similar to the whole Dogecoin situation. Everything that happened
another
there.
Political statement the other way.
Now it's the opposite.
Yeah.
So
again, the country, it's hopefully a unique a place. We're going to talk to Mike Pompeo about it. We come back from the break. I do want you to support the work of the ACLJ, because one thing that we are sure of is we're going to have an election. And what we at the ACLJ want to make sure is that you get to choose who you want to be your nominee for president, and that you're not going to let unelected judges and these individuals filed things and say, you can't have this person on the ballot. You can't vote for them in the primary because, why, they're leading in the polls? They're the greatest threat to the party establishment or the D.C. establishment? So we're fighting in Colorado, in Oklahoma. We are fighting now in West Virginia. We can announce that. There are more states to announce as well. Go to ACLJ.org and support our work to defend your right to vote. That's at ACLJ.org. To Sekio. We are taking your calls too. We got a final segment coming up at 1-800-684-3110. So a great time to get your calls on this Friday. We talk about a lot of topics. It's great to be joined now by former Secretary of State Advisor to the ACLJ, former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, who I got to see in New York earlier this week while the UN General Assembly was going on. I want to ask him about something that happened at the UN General Assembly. Let's play it, Will. This is the President of Iran addressing the United Nations in New York. Take a listen.
But the Islamic Republic of Iran, through the use of all tools and capacities in order to bring to justice the perpetrators and all those who had a hand in this government-sanctioned act of terror, will not sit until that is done. The blood of the oppressed will not be forgotten, and the robes of the guilty will bring them to justice.
Secretary Pompeo, I don't like to make a joke of this or to smile about some of this rhetoric that is actually used in the, you know, in the United States when we hear that even in translation. But he's talking about you. He's talking about people like you in the Trump administration who they believe were responsible for making the call and suggesting to President Trump to take out Qasem Soleimani, the head of the Quds Force, the Revolutionary Guard.
No, that's right. I must say, you and I were both there in New York. We were less than a mile from where he was uttering those words. The United States had just given him $6 billion. He then proceeded to threaten me and the others with our lives, all the while being protected by Secret Service from the United States of America. It is mind-numbling bad U.S. policy to have permitted each of those things to have happened. You know, as for him, this guy's a bad guy. He's known as the Butcher of Tehran. He killed thousands and thousands of Iranians. He was also responsible for the death of many American soldiers, sailors, airmen, and Marines in the Middle East. He is a terrorist. So was General Soleimani, who we took a legitimate strike on President Trump's direction. We did the right thing. I am very confident that we saved American lives. And to allow him to come abuse the United Nations and abuse the United States in this way is truly tragic and bad policy. Not just me, not just the other government officials, but these folks are working to kill other Americans as well. And to be negotiating with them to give them space to create a nuclear weapons program is just ridiculous.
And I feel like they love this time in New York, Secretary Pompeo, when they get the protection of the Secret Service, they get the protection of the United Nations, they get to get up, even after the $6 billion, even after this deal made by the Biden administration, and spew their hate, and spew their terror, and spew their rhetoric, and know that here in the United States, they will be protected. That it's more dangerous mostly for them usually at home than it is abroad in New York. And that's just the bottom line truth. But there's this kind of interplay. And I want to ask you about that, where it's like, where does the U.S. have to like kind of put their foot down with the UN and say, this can't be a platform for this kind of rhetoric?
Well, Jordan, look, it's a privilege that we have the UN here in the United States. We have amazing freedoms, and I'm glad for that. But this guy broke the law. This guy is in violation of U.S. law, and we have every right. The State Department had every right to deny him a visa to travel here. We don't have to let everyone in just because the UN is here. And so, you know, it was a mistake. It was a mistake to allow him to come do that. I will say this, too. The United States didn't even put out a statement after this in a serious way, saying, no, what he said was outrageous and wrong. No one at the UN said he abused the platform that we provided him to threaten American officials. They just sat there and took it, and it's kind of just a little bit of a joke. And then he'll go back to his country a hero and with more power than he had when he left there.
Yeah, act like he's a tough guy by uttering these words. But as you remind people, what people in Iran won't see is that the reason he can utter those words with such confidence on that stage is because he's being protected by Americans and being protected by UN staff so that nothing happens to him. And again, I would say it's much more dangerous for these people to be back when they are at home than when they are abroad. But you did talk about the importance of not giving this up. We believe that too at the ACLJ. That's why we engage at the UN, both in New York and in Geneva, through our European Center for Law and Justice too. We've been doing it for decades. Is we feel like if you just say I don't like this institution, we just give up on it, that the world is going to be a worse place, so we're going to have less influence. So let's use all the influence we can. So if it's going to be right at home here in the United States. And we're kind of re-engaging in this post-COVID world where we're having meetings again and we're back together again. We need to use these opportunities for good.
Jordan, you have this absolutely right. We have the ability. America's moral force in the world has the ability and capacity, when America is led properly, to do precisely that, to shape the conversations at the United Nations. Look, the United Nations has all kinds of shortcomings. The ACLJ has absolutely made it better and has stayed engaged there at the International Criminal Court, all the other elements of the international space where America's leadership can matter and make lives better for every American and people all across the world. We can't simply throw up our hands. We have to stay at it. And I regret only that this year we engaged at the UN, but we did so from a position of weakness.
Yeah, it does feel that way when people see those kind of comments and they realize, they say, how is this happening? He's threatening American blood. In a stage right in America and being protected by Americans at the time. Now, I do want to go to something more positive. Prime Minister Netanyahu of Israel unveiled a vision for a new Middle East at the UN. And we know that the Biden administration has been pushing against this and these positive moves that were happening under the Trump administration as your time as Secretary of State. But he announced the governments of India, Israel, the UAE, and the United States, a new joint space venture. I mean, those sounds like that will play into a U.S. effort, I mean, it's there for the taking, to create more peace in the Middle East.
I want to give the Biden administration credit. The agreements that were announced a couple of weeks back in India, connecting India and Europe through the Middle East and through Israel, are really good things. But that's just an announcement. That's just a press release. They now need to go execute against it. And the policies that the United States has put in place have made that more difficult. Not producing our own energy, not isolating the Iranian regime, not being connected deeply to Israel, understanding its centrality to the region, calling the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, calling its leader a pariah. Those are things that make those kind of agreements really difficult to implement. And so while the top line was good, everything else the Biden administration has done has made that even more difficult. We need to promote peace and prosperity in the Middle East for our own benefit. You can't do it while you're abandoning our friends and allies in the region.
Yeah, I think people too, on the issue with Ukraine, this is bubbling up with Congress and the funding, and where people are saying, listen, it's not that we don't think that we're on the right side here, but they ask the administration, do you see what is like an endpoint for you? And Kirby gets up and says, well, there's no U.S. troops involved, so we don't really need an endpoint. But when Americans see that it's hundreds of millions of dollars being spent, they do want an endpoint. Their inflation is up, the gas prices are up, and that is directly related to what's happening in this war between Ukraine and Russia. It's affecting Europe's economy as well. So if we're going to fund it, I mean, we do want to see an end to it. It's not a good answer to say, well, we've kept U.S. troops out of it, but we are using your dollars, and we don't need to give you an answer.
It's important that U.S. troops aren't involved. That's absolutely true, but it is completely insufficient. You have that right, Jordan. President Biden still now, a year and a half, almost 2 years on, still hasn't explained to the American people why it matters. I believe that it does. I've articulated why I think it matters to every American that we help the Ukrainians win this and defeat Vladimir Putin. I know what the definition of that ought to look like. President Biden needs to articulate that, explain it. It is a lot of money that's being spent. We are leading the effort there. The Europeans need to do more. I hope that they will. But in the end, I do believe this is the right thing. We simply have to explain what it is we're trying to achieve, how it is we intend to achieve it, and what that endpoint looks like exactly. To say, gosh, we don't need an endpoint, is a recipe for American failure.
Yeah, it's leadership. Secretary Pompeo, we appreciate your leadership and your support, your work with us here at the ACLJ. It was good to see you this week in New York and last week in Tennessee. We talked about a lot of this New York. You've been there, you've lived there too. And again, we've done a lot of work there at the ACLJ for years now through the UN. And there are times when you feel like the U.S. has got a great standing. Doesn't mean everybody loves you, by the way, and we have a great standing. But you feel like you're the tough guy when you walk in.
At least have
like
power.
You're respected.
Yeah.
Sometimes hated, but respected. And there are times when you feel like the world's kind of laughing at you. And I will tell you, this time felt a little bit more like that. Like, again, New York is not the city that it once was. Maybe just a few years ago, the mayor of New York during the UN is saying that New York is going to crumble and crashed because too many migrant children are going to school there. And literally that he's saying on TV, that's going to destroy New York. While we are hosting the entire world,
right.
New York public schools are failing.
Yeah, the center of the world is supposed to be New York City. And if it's falling apart, and look, we're not talking about now, we're talking about years past COVID lockdowns, those kind of things. Sure, did it ever fully recover from that? Absolutely not. Still has not. But we're not talking about policies that are even directly related to that, that are causing some crisis in that amazing city. Give us a call. We are going to take as many calls as we can in this last segment, and we actually have quite a few open lines. We've got five open lines. So if you want to call right now, this is a perfect time to get on the air. You can ask about any of the topics we brought up today, or if you have something else, anything from this week, we'd love to hear from you. 1-800-684-3110.
Let me, too, say to you, on our fight to make sure we're protecting your right to vote, we have another announcement we've signed on with the West Virginia GOP to defend the right to vote for West Virginians. There's another state. I just can't quite announce it today on the radio show. Maybe this afternoon, if not early next week. That would make it four states, four different kinds of courts we're engaged in to protect your right to vote. While this broadcast is going on, as ACLJ attorneys are working in Colorado as we speak in a hearing there to protect your right to vote. And it is the left working with Republican elites in Washington, D.C., who want to keep Donald Trump off the ballot. That's their choice this time. They don't want you to be able to choose Donald Trump. We're protecting your right to make that decision. Support the work of the ACLJ at aclj.org. We'll be right back. All right, welcome back to Secchio. We were talking just a bit briefly about New York. And this is, again, I know most of our listeners aren't in New York City. We have a lot of listeners around New York City and a lot of listeners who, again, you probably work for a company where New York is very important to you because it's the financial center of the world. And I still think that's the truth with Wall Street, with the United Nations. I mean, decisions on war and peace are made there. But it's not, it has not been able to bounce back. It is one of those perfect examples of far left policies maybe destroying kind of the centerpieces of the United States. Yeah. I wouldn't go as far as San Francisco.
But in that same.
In the vein. And this is why. This is the governor of New York, the sanctuary city, the Statue of Liberty. We can take everybody. We don't care who it is. We're such a big city that we can, we're not going to crumble. Our facilities, we've got enough space. We got enough places in school. We got enough money. No problem. Here's the governor of New York, a Democrat.
We really need to stop the incoming. We're still seeing about 3,000 a week. That's absolutely unsustainable. We're working so hard, spending millions of dollars, state dollars, to build shelters to house 3,000 here, 2,000 here, 1,000 here. It's still not enough. So the word has to get out that New York has always been that place of welcoming immigrants. All of us came from somewhere, our parents did, grandparents. But there is a limit to who we can house at this time, and we need the rest of the country to step up. But most importantly, it starts at the border with enforcement.
So there you go, Logan.
Yep.
3,000 a week.
She said that, by the way, on MSNBC, Democrat mayor, or Democrat governor, I'm sorry, not necessarily going into conservative territory, not hearing what they want to hear. This is not...
Mayor Adams said it's going to destroy
us. Right. This is not what they want you to see on the news.
No. Not the left.
No.
Because these are their cities where they thought they were in control. But you know what? When you actually look at New York and you look up a lot of the times, so you look into office buildings, there is no one in them.
Yeah.
I mean, floor of just empty
of
space.
Darkness.
And it wasn't. This was not because of 9/11. This was not because of terrorism. This was because people left with COVID and said, I don't want to come back.
That's mainly it. It's not even that like some of these policies are still there.
They didn't know how to incentivize people to come back.
Yeah, spaces are just up for grabs because of that. We were there last year, and it was that we were staying pretty high up in a hotel and had like a little balcony. I looked over the Fifth Avenue or whatever it was, and it was just... It was just empty. It was just empty floors. And you'd occasionally see like a person like walking and like it was almost creepy because it'd be like one dude who's still in this building who's having to like make sure that there's no squatters, or something like that happening there.
And we grew up in the New York in almost the post 9/11 New York, I'd say.
Sure.
I was in college in D.C. We went up to New York all the time.
2003.
It was just like patriotic to go back to New York. And maybe as Americans, we reinvested in New York because we said this is going to be a city that grows. It's going to be the Statue of Liberty. See, this is the city that stands and through COVID and through bad policy decisions, it can come back.
Yes,
but it now is at a point where it has to come back. It's not a quick fix.
Yeah, I mean the only places when we were there that felt like thriving were places where young people are, were places like a Greenwich Village still. It feels like there were people still. Yeah, exactly. Students, people that are still working. Other than that, it felt like, you know, the tourist areas felt sketchy.
Yeah.
And then the non, you know, the really nice areas felt empty. Let's go ahead and take some phone calls. We got a lot of calls coming in. Let's go and just go in order how they came in. Josh was calling California, watching on YouTube. You're on the air.
Hey, Josh.
Hey there, guys. Thanks for all you do, and God bless all of you. Can you guys hear me?
We can. Gotcha. Go ahead with your comment.
Oh, great. So my questions pertain to the efforts of the Democrats to keep Donald Trump off the ballot in 2024. And since they're trying to do this based on allegations of crimes against the United States, why don't Republicans deploy a mutually destructive strategy and try to remove Biden from the 2024 ballot based on his alleged corruption?
You want to do the Democrats work for them, Josh? I mean, that's the thing. The Democrats would love you to remove Joe Biden from the ballot. They could have another Democrat. That would actually make their life easier. I say that in jest. Listen, I don't want to be that party. I don't want to be the party who says, you know what? We're going to ban people's right to vote. I don't want to be those D.C. elites that say, Republican or Democrat. And there's Republicans in this fight, too, who want to tell you you can't vote for Donald Trump. Plenty of them. D.C. attorneys. I can name them. They have been named. They are publicly doing this. So I'm not trying to be mean by saying it. Who want to tell you, you can't vote for Donald Trump. Let's not be those people. Let's be the people that say the American people are going to choose the best person. We might not always like the outcome of the election, but the American people are going to choose the best person to be the nominees for the major political parties, and then they're going to make the decision about who they want to be president of the United States. And again, I don't want to be the person or group, but I get your point, but I don't want to be the person or group who ever tells somebody, you can't vote for this person without due process. There's been no due process. There's been no hearing. There's been no adjudication that they aren't qualified to be president of the United States. And for goodness sakes, in this case, this is someone who has served as president of the United States under a time that the U.S. did pretty well in the world.
Absolutely. Let's continue on. Take some calls. Let's go to...
What do you want your interest rates for the Trump administration?
Yeah, it sounds nice.
That's all I'd like to say.
Yeah. Interest rates and gas prices would be fantastic.
Yeah.
Let's go to Vanessa, who's calling in California. Watch on ACLJ.org. Thank you. You're on the air.
Good morning. Thank you very much for taking my call and for all the hard work you do. It's a pleasure to get to participate in supporting this effort. My question is, our country is trillions of dollars in debt. I'd like to know why we're giving billions away instead of paying down our debt.
Well, I mean, listen, you could do both. I don't say you give billions away. You could both be offensive and defensively start figuring out debt and spending. But when you do that, you got to explain it to the American people. I think this is the time you're talking about Ukraine. It feels like we just spend and spend and spend on these issues, but then we don't. Instead of spending and spending and spending, Logan, on securing the border.
Yeah.
Like where people, I think, would see, hey, we'd go into debt a little bit more if we could secure our border.
Yeah, if you felt like you were actually getting something for that debt.
Yeah.
Sure. That's part
of
the process.
And if we could bring this war in Ukraine to an end and bring gas prices down, okay, go into debt a little. We'll figure it out, you know, from there. But when it feels like the world is getting us stuck into a war of attrition so that they could sink our economy, and it kind of feels like that right now, that the U.S. just isn't the world leader it used to be, as I want to underscore, the leader of Russia on the Security Council and China on the Security Council, one of the five permanent members of the UN Security Council, decided they'll skip out at the United Nations.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. We got 2 minutes. Let's quickly get Barbara watching on Rumble. Barbara, you're on the air.
Oh, thank you so much. My question really was for Mike Pompeo. I want to know what our country is doing to promote peace between Ukraine and Russia. I listen to so many news broadcasts. I don't hear anybody talking about what can the United States do to promote peace? And if we could tie peace to some of the money that we're giving them.
Yeah, President Trump did talk about it.
Yeah, he's like, I just want people to stop dying.
The first step towards you're going to get to actual peace, that might be a long time.
Yeah.
Because when your countries go to war and you start dying at the rate people have been dying in this conflict, both Russians are going to be angry about it and Ukrainians probably generationally. But you do want to have a plan for how I've thought about it too. You know, we used to have an office in Moscow. We were not allowed to continue that work because the European banks, the U.S. banks had put sanctions. There's just no way to get money in anymore. They couldn't take the money either from Russia. But we still have those contacts. I would love one day to be able to announce on this broadcast that we reopened that office in Moscow, that we're able to re-engage and kind of restart the relationship that we were building in the post-Cold War. that we had these good relationships going between the, it wasn't perfect, but we were working together.
Right.
And all of a sudden, this kind of threw that all the baby out with the bathwater.
Yeah, it felt like we just went back 30, 40 years.
Yes.
All right, well, that's going to do it for today on Seculo. You need to support the work of the ACLJ by going to aclj.org. You can join us in the fight as we are taking those 14th Amendment cases. They're growing and growing.
There are. So we've told you about, Oklahoma. We've told you about, of course, Colorado. Our team right now is in that case in Colorado as we speak during this whole broadcast. They've been engaged. I can announce to you today we've signed on the West Virginia GOP. There's another state as well. I just didn't have time to get to it today. We're signing the paperwork as we speak, and there could be more. Protecting your right to vote. Your right to vote. That's what we're doing at the American Center for Law and Justice. Support that work, because the left and liberal elites and Republican elites in D.C. want to tell you who you can and can't vote for, and we won't stand for that at the ACLJ. Donate today at aclj.org. We'll talk to you next week.